Okay, we may have some more coming in a little bit, I hope, but we'll go ahead and get started because we said we'd try to start at 1:30. This is something entirely new for me as far as doing it. I have been at several gatherings where there have been open forums, and let me kind of explain to any of you that haven't been at one what we try to do. And since this group is fairly small, we can stay a lot less formal than maybe they do in a larger group. But really what we wanted to provide this hour and a half for this afternoon was in thought that maybe we didn't cover all the relevant issues in the topics that we assigned, or that there might be some who've heard lectures and either disagree with parts of it and would like to express that, or heard something that you'd like to hear more detail about. A whole wide gamut of what we can do with this. The one restriction I'm trying to impose upon it, and it's not absolute if you can make a connection, but I wanted to kind of avoid spending the whole afternoon talking about how many elders a man has to have to be how many children an elder has to have before he can be an elder, and things that might be of that sort. I'm not trying to suggest those are unimportant issues, but we've really tried to focus today on trying to better understand, both from the point of view of being elders and working with elders and being in a congregation with elders, what elders are actually supposed to do. And then maybe from there, are there insights that some brethren that are elders might be able to give us into how we can do that job better? And we're hoping, too, that brethren that maybe never will be associated with the role of elders will have a better appreciation of what it is elders are trying to do, and maybe we'll understand better what we see in some of their decisions and all of that. So I really didn't get any written questions from anyone. So either we did an outstanding job of covering the material, or we're all in agreement, or some third area, I don't know. But let me ask of any of you, do you all have any things that you'd like to raise? And we've got a good group of elders up here. Tom?
I got two questions.
All right.
Let me ask.
All right.
I heard once this morning about elders and some of the sleepless nights and the troubles that they have. And I'm curious, do you feel God's presence? Are you able to sleep at night? And if not, does that mean that you are internalizing a lot of the problems and you're not turning it over to God, how does God, do you feel His presence? Is He helping you out? And are you able to sleep at night? But I would think that, I just want to learn from you guys' examples. And I have trouble sleeping at night for things, and I'm thinking, well, maybe, I'm trying to do things or I'm not turning things over to God like I'm supposed to. And I'm curious whether you guys have got to a point where you can just sleep at night with all the problems and you know that God's going to take care of it, or do you still wrestle with that kind of stuff?
Well, who's the sleepiest elder up here? Any of you guys want to try to tackle that? Thoughts about that? Bill?
Only got so much range there. You may have to scoot it.
As far as the sleepless nights, they do happen. And the first question you always ask yourself, what is the truth on this situation? And then the next thing is, have I got courage enough to do the right thing? And that may be a divided thing. It may be opinions that are divided over subjects. You think, what is best for the local congregation? And therefore, yeah, there are some sleepless nights, but it's usually wrestling with myself. Am I going to do the right thing, what I believe to be the best for the congregation and best for the church? So I don't know if that answers your question or not, but
do you feel God? I mean, is he helping you out?
I feel that I'll be blessed if I do the right thing.
I'm supposed to be talking from a sheep man's view on this. A few years ago, we had a flock of sheep that got foot rot. And it's a bad disease in the sheep. And my wife and I, twice a day, every day, for a long time, had to catch each one of them and dip each of their 4 feet in medication. And foot rot has its name because the foot is, it's nasty, all right? So I say all of that to say it was not a pleasant job. It was physically exhausting and emotionally exhausting because your flock was at stake. And I was sharing this with a brother, and he said, wow, he says, sounds like the fun's out of it, and if the fun's out of it, I think I'd get out of it. And I wanted to say, and that's why you're not an elder, not a shepherd, because there are some things that go with it that you do because of who you are and not because if you're tired or you're sleepless or you're worn out or if you're emotionally, stressed about it. For the last few years, I've been very blessed not to have a lot of those kinds of nights within our congregation, and I thank God for that. But I think Bill's very on the mark that most of the internal struggle that we might have is in making sure that our motives are right in trying to make good decisions and to do what's right and pleasing in God's sight. We have to keep asking ourselves, why are we making the decision that we make about what it is? And it's got to be for the right reason.
I'll say that there are still sleepless nights. I don't think we'll ever get away from that. That's just human nature. And I trust in God, and I believe that God is going to help me to see the right answer. But I don't think he's going to come down and smack me across the face and say, this is the answer. He's going to count on me to know his word, to study his word, and to find the answer there. He might help me to have wisdom. He might help me to have the right kind of understanding, but I think he's going to rely on me to do the hard work. And that can generate some sleepless nights because we have an awesome responsibility that we have to look at the situation, look at all of the facts, and come up with that right answer. But he's given us the guidance, and we have to look to that guidance and trust in him that he will help us to come to that right conclusion.
I'm not sure I have much more to add to what these other guys have said, but I guess I would add one other thought is you have great wisdom that God's given in the fact that there's a plurality of elders. There's we're blessed at Kettering in the fact that we have four men now that are elders. I know West Carrollton, there's three here, two. So,
two.
Okay, sorry. And Bill, three. Okay. So, the thing that you're able to do is lean upon one another. And that's the wisdom that God shared with given the plurality, and so you don't have first off you don't have to feel like you're all by yourself, and working together, I think that's the key thing. Whatever the problem might be, you recognize that there's others that you can go to. Not only you can, you know, get on your knee, not only can you open up the Word of God, but you have other men that you can go to and you can share thoughts with, and at times when needed, get great insight, and to recognize that, you know, it's there are others that are, you know, collectively we're all trying to work through the good that needs to be accomplished, certainly not only for the glorification of God, but for whatever the particular situation might be that maybe the individual's addressing in their own personal life, you know, the saint. As Brother Mike's saying, it's an awesome responsibility. One that, as we said, I think as Matt was saying, and Mike, you know, it starts off with a desire. And I think in the short time, well, short time is relative, but in the time that I've been an elder at Kettering, it's been enlightening. The number of, you might say, doctrinal issues versus personal issues. I don't know how the other guys feel in their particular, Randy, or, you know, you're in your perspective, but there are more people problems, and people problems come from sin problems, and sin problems come from spiritual problems, and they all relate all together, right, in some way, and certainly there's a lot of times where you take that home and you wrestle with it, and you try to seek, and you try to think and ponder, you know what's the right thing that needs to be done here, and you have restless nights. If you're a parent, you have restless nights. If you're at work, struggling with maybe how to make the next payroll, or how to, you know, sell the product line or whatever, right? So you're just dealing with a different dimension, and the fact that you've got souls that are at risk, and that's a big thing.
We might have gotten to about everything except the part whether we feel the presence of God. And that's difficult to answer because don't always know what somebody is asking you in that regard. I believe we all feel God's presence in the sense that having read and understood what He tells us and what He's going to do and what we ought to do, we feel His presence in that way. But sometimes when people ask you that question, they're asking, do you have a warm feeling in the midst of your body that tells you He's there? And I don't think any of us would think that. But they've expressed pretty well. I think we usually get to a more peaceful place, but when you're trying to ascertain what the facts are and then trying to ascertain how do you deal with it, there's a lot of racing of the mind to try to figure out what the right thing is. But I think Hobart and I have talked enough about this. I'll try to answer for him too, and if he doesn't like my answer, he'll chime in. But I think once we think we've gotten the facts straight and said and done and acted the way we ought to, understand we ought to, then we can back away and have pretty good peace, regardless of how it's received or whether people respond to it, because we feel like we've given the right answer and done it to the best of our ability to do that. And that allows at least me to sleep. I think Hobart eventually gets there too.
And one other thing, because you mentioned putting it in God's hand, and that is a comfort we have. But even though you put something in God's hands, you still have to execute. So, you know, we still have to judgment and do something. So even though you're putting it in God's hand, and that does, you are right, that does relieve some of that anxiety. But understand you still have to continue from there and execute. So.
You had a second question.
The difficulties at home and difficulties at work, in my experience, can often be tied back to communication problems between all the parties involved. And I was curious with the elders here, the specifics on how they communicate with the flock. Do they, is it newsletters? Is it no communication at all? Is it one-on-one in the house visits? Are they concerned that if they open it up, that the flock will think that you know, the flock is making the decisions, and you know, they want to make sure that they understand that they might just be soliciting information, and I'm just curious about how do they actually communicate, and what have been good communication methods, what have been not so good, so that everybody can learn, you know, how to better, you know, relate with others.
Real good question. An area that I think Hobart and I need to work some more on is making sure we do communicate well, and let these guys take it here in a minute. I would say that sometimes your methodology has something to do with the size of your congregation. It may need to be different. The larger it is, the more you may need more written information than you would in a smaller group. It's very hard for much of anything to go on in a congregation this size without most brethren having a fair amount of knowledge of it. But what the elders are deciding to do, whether we communicate that well, that's a real good point. So I'll start at the other end this time, Rich, and tell us about communication.
Well, like you said, communication is vital to anything. It's vital to any organization, whether that's a spousal relationship, parent-child relationship, one at work, or whatever it might be, right? And I think where there's the absence of communication, there's trouble, right? Or there can be the potentiality of trouble. When people don't understand the direction, or they feel like maybe they don't know where the leadership's taking, you know, that opens the door. So, you know, I've been kind of at both of those spectrums, in the sense that I was at when I first became a Christian in Colorado Springs, we had men's meetings, and that was fortunately a very short amount of time in my young adult life as a Christian, but I remember those times, right? I remember times being a deacon, and the eldership didn't communicate very well, okay, to the congregation. And I think I learned, or at least I tried to learn, as I got into this role, to try to do the best that we could as an eldership to communicate to the congregation at Kettering. And we set up a couple of different ways to do it. We used to do quarterly meetings where we would try to get the deacons to report maybe formally on their particular areas of responsibilities. The elders would report on, you know, important things and direction and where we're going. Within the last couple of years, we've really kind of taken a little bit of a different tack, a little bit of a different role, and we kind of saw the quarterly meetings kind of end up in the gripe sessions, right? And that served no purpose. It serves no purpose. And if we're trying to communicate to the congregation what's going on, that's one thing. If there was a problem or if there was a concern, why don't you just come see us separately, come see us offline, we'll address your concerns, instead of, you know, having this open forum with the congregation where everybody's, you know, griping or complaining about something. It serves no purpose, and it's more of a distraction than anything else. So we kind of adopted maybe a little bit of a different tact in the sense that when we put our yearly communication together at the end of the year, we're getting ready to do this on the 18th of November because our quarter starts in December. We'll report to the congregation from the eldership's perspective and tell them here are the things that you know went well this year, things that maybe we need to we missed on a few things, but more importantly, here's where we're going next year. And in the last couple of 3 or 4 years, we've put together a document, if you will, for the congregation. We've mapped out exactly from an eldership perspective, you know, where we're going, what the theme is, you know, where we're going quarter by quarter, what the lessons are, and you know, the whole thing is architected, constructed, and it will be laid out for the congregation in on the 18th. You know, hopefully through that level of communication, the congregation knows what's going on. I guess one of the more difficult things to do as an eldership is to communicate to the congregation when discipline is necessary. And that's always a difficult thing, but sometimes also a very needed thing, right? How that gets communicated, how it's how it gets said. I guess one of the things, and these guys maybe can kind of shed some light, you know, not everything needs to be communicated, okay? So there are some things that the congregation just don't need to know, all right? Yeah, there was a problem. Problem's been dealt with, and if you have a concern, you come see us, and you don't need to go into any other detail, you know, as far as, so, I don't know, that's just, I don't know, maybe a couple of my observations on communication.
Mike? Well, just on that last point, I agree with Rich that there are some things that the other members of the congregation don't need to know, and I think in some ways that would bring about more trust with the elders. If I've got a problem and I come to somebody and then the next thing you know, everybody in the congregation knows about that problem, then I'm not going to go to that person with any more of my problems. So I totally agree with that. I agree with everything you said, actually. Communication is very, very important, and I don't think there is one best way. Everyone in the congregation is a little bit different. So what we might need to do is have several forms of communication, not just trying one way. Now, we have tried congregational meetings, and as Rich said, those turn into gripe sessions. So I'm not sure how useful those are, although we might try some again, because there are some people that probably did well with those. But just in my opinion, those didn't really turn out to be as useful as we thought they would be. Some of the other ways that we've tried, back with one of our prior elders, he and I would take turns having a number of the members into our home for dinner. And then we would take some time and talk to them. But they really turned into more just of a social thing, and we really didn't get into any of what the real issues are. What I've been planning to do and just never have gotten started was to just start calling people. And maybe, you know, a few people every week, call them up and just say, you know, how are things going? What do you think are the problems at the church? What could we do that's better? Is there anything we're doing that might be wrong? But, you know, I get pressed for time, and I've just never gotten started on that. So I need someone to maybe kick me and get me started on that. But that would be just another way of finding out what's going on and getting to know the people better and getting to know what's on their mind. We try to announce various things after the elders meet. John and I are the ones that do the announcements on Sunday, so if there's anything important that had come out from the previous elders meeting, we try to talk about that. We publish notes from the elders' meetings and put those on the bulletin board so people can read the different things that, we've discussed. And again, there are certain things we don't put in those notes. So we may have a line in there that we talked about the spiritual problems with certain people. We don't ever put any names. We don't ever put any specific details of what that would be, but just to let people know that we are looking at those kinds of issues. So there are a lot of different things that we ought to be doing to communicate, and we have to look at different ways of communicating because all of the people are different.
I think I heard, excuse me, two questions. One was, how do elders communicate with each other? And then how do elders communicate with the congregation? I'll do the first one first. And it's an area that I think the three of us would agree that we are working on. I think we're improving in that area. It's hard to communicate without spending time together. A number of years ago, we determined to do, as was mentioned this morning, go into the homes of each and every member of the family within that year. And I think that was the time that we indeed did spend the most time together, and were we just understood where each other was a whole lot. It was a really good time. We're talking with each other about our thoughts and our ideas and about each member's family and their situation and things like that. It's good, and Randy and I talked about this just a little bit a while back, but sometimes I fret because, and it's a poor quality, character quality, that I think, well, this should or that should or whatever. And he was talking about the quality of having diversity in elders, that we are different, and that elders among themselves need to appreciate that diversity in their personalities and develop that as a strength and not as a weakness, and to feed off of that for the congregation. I may come back to some of that, I think that is always probably a work in progress. And you just get closer and closer in that relationship. If it goes the other way, definitely you got some problems, all right? With respect to how we do communicate with the congregation, we do have, we've tried a number of ways. We do have an annual meeting where, and actually ours does not turn into a gripe session. It's a very positive meeting. We go over budgetary items, some things that we want to do for the physical facility, and then spiritual goals of where we're going. Talk about the meetings that are planned for the year and some different things like that. Those seem to be, I think, a very positive time together to communicate. Our congregation is not that large in numbers, but we're really spread out. From east to west or north to south, it might be a 30 to 40 mile spread. And so what we are doing now is we have divided up somewhat, but not entirely, geographically, the congregation into three groups. And each of us is responsible for really keeping tabs and initiating activity and interest and things within our group. And we deliberately have our group to be doing something interacting with another group so that it's not this little group and that little group and that little group. It's the idea of keeping this group active and doing something. And we're seeing some good progress and some good results there. There was, and I didn't get to attend this one, but I think last Sunday, people from all three groups went and visited someone, a shut-in in the one group, and so but this group was responsible for getting that together. It wasn't an elder's responsibility. It wasn't a deacon's responsibility. It was members within that group, and so we're trying to do those kinds of things. I think that we're seeing some good progress there. Churches are not the little community church that a lot of us grew up in. And the whole concept of communication with each other as members and with elders to members and elders to elders, I think becomes increasingly a challenge to pick up the phone and to call. I started that this year. I got so far down, and, you know, you don't dare start over at the top again. You better start wherever you quit. But that's a challenge. We do let them know when we're having a business an elders meeting. I said business meeting. I haven't seen one of those for decades. But anyway, let them know when we're going to have that, and encourage questions, input, thoughts, concerns, or whatever within that. It's an ongoing. I do think that the idea of having Mike mentioned this morning the part about, I think it was Mike, about the older people and the technology versus the younger ones. That might be one good positive thing for having young elders. But some of you are technology savvy elders, and that's a whole completely new world of communication for a lot of the congregation, and we need to learn how to communicate with those that we are responsible for shepherding, and that can take on a lot of different forms.
Communication that we have with the congregation that's according to the seriousness of what we're dealing with. If we're appointing elders and deacons, and we do from time to time, Mike give lessons on it. We hand out papers. We let everybody have a say about it. Then we review that, and we encourage people to come and talk to us if they have concerns or if there's anything to that. When Mike come to preach for us, he came and tried out. It's at another level. And we have the congregation to give time to them to talk to him, to understand him, to meet him, and see what their opinions are. Other situations, we just try to handle as, being a smaller congregation, we handle as talk things over, and then we try to announce to the congregation the important things that we feel that they know. And we probably fail in a lot of areas, but that's generally the way we go about it.
Well, that was a real good question and a big issue, I think, with every eldership. Let me add one more thing about it. These fellows have talked a lot about mechanisms for communicating. Sometimes there's more than mechanism involved, though. Rich or someone mentioned that you have to communicate. Maybe it was, I'm not sure. Well, I'm not sure who mentioned it now, but different people communicate in different fashions. And most men have to learn the way women communicate if they're going to do very well in their marriage. It's not exactly the way we men do it. And then all we men are not exactly the same. And I know Hobart and I've faced the frustration of thinking that we had communicated something exceptionally clearly and repeatedly, and then got feedback that indicated that what we were doing and what we were saying either in one fashion had not been heard or had not been understood. So however many different mechanisms that you use, whether you put out a printed thing, have meetings, whatever it is, there's a lot that has to. Communication is always a two-way thing. I'm very interested in this. I've spent my life in communications. 17 years in the newspaper business, and the rest of the time, all that time plus ever since trying to communicate the gospel, and I don't think that there's anything I found more difficult at times than communicating some things to some folks, because it is a two-way street. And part of the lessons that you heard this morning would go a long way into improving that, because if there isn't the right attitude, that's what Matt was talking about, if there's not the right attitude, if you get in your mind, these elders don't have my interest at heart, they don't know what they're doing, you've been talking that a blue streak for a couple months in your family, and then they say something, give some direction or something, you are going to take everything they say and run it through that prism, and it's going to come out differently than what those elders said. So for communication to work, there's a lot of things that underlie that that have to be working right too for there to be good communication. Most of us who are married have had some time or the other in our relationships where things were either a little rocky to terrible, and do you remember trying to communicate in those periods of time and how successful or unsuccessful it was? Unless you get the other stuff right, I don't care what kind of mechanisms you use, there won't be good communication. Now, one thing I haven't done yet, and I really wanted to, if there's any of you in the audience that want to chime in on this and get involved, I didn't mean to just limit it to these four elders up here. You are welcome to add what you think might be valuable as well. That's part of the open forum as well. Anybody want to jump in on any of the things that we've talked about thus far this afternoon? There you go.
And this just really addresses, I think, the communication issue. In my secular business, I was involved, and I now work for an organization, but I was a volunteer member of an insurance agents association that has 1,100 members and different businesses being members. And for years, I served on the board, 12 people. And we had professional consultants come in and talk to us about leading an organization like that. And one of the things that they told us, and I think elders have to realize this in order for the communication to work, is they said, you are not your members. You don't think like your members. If you thought like your members, you wouldn't be here, because there's 1,100 of them and there's 12 of you. People who will be a board member, who will be a volunteer in any organization, are the minority, and the minority tend not to think. The things that make them who that is tends to think differently about things than the people they're serving. And, you know, I think all truth really begins with God, so I think good business principles, all those things are there in Scripture somewhere or in human nature. And I've started to think more and more about that, is that where the disconnect comes in, regardless of the methods or whatever, is that it's hard for two, three, or four men who will accept the responsibility to get in a room and then think exactly the way the people they're trying to serve and lead think. And the reverse of that is true. Because I think if you're an elder, you share the idea that a lot of times when you are with your fellow elders, one of the things, at least that I feel sometimes, is what on earth were they thinking? You know, whether you're talking about a group in the congregation or an individual that's struggling with something, how on earth do they think that way? Well, the problem is you don't think that way, or you wouldn't be in a position after 40 years of being a Christian to have been selected as an elder. You didn't think that way when you were their age. Not to the extent that they do, because you made progress and they're stuck there. And so I think the real communication issue is getting people to sense where the other group is coming from. And I have to think that once I got that lesson about business leadership in this organization to say, when we deliberate on this business matter, we don't ask ourselves the question, what do we think? Because we're the board. We ask ourselves the question, where are our members at on this? Where are they thinking? And I think that's helped me as an elder. And Boyd's talked about the fact that we've had to work a lot on communication. You can't find three more different men, personality-wise. See, Boyd, I thanked Randy for picking today for this meeting because Ohio State doesn't play football today. Boyd doesn't know they play football at all. Did you go to Ohio State some? Yeah. Benny, our other elder, is probably out chasing a deer somewhere trying to kill Bambi's mother if it's season right now. You know, we are as different of human beings as we can be, and we've had to work at communicating with each other. But then when you start talking about that other situation, saying, you know, how is somebody thinking that causes them to act this way, then you have to bridge the communication gap. And I just thought I'd share it with you because going through that professionally led training in a totally different environment is what caused me to start thinking, as an elder, when the three of you get together, you can't talk internal talk because the way we think is not necessarily the way different levels of members in even a small congregation think, because that's why we are not the only old guys at our congregation, but it's why we're the three that are the elders. And so you have to learn to expand thinking that way as well.
Yes. Oh, you're a big enough loudmouth. You can. Go ahead.
I hate it when I agree with Jim. But that's true. And I think for all of us that whichever way we're trying to communicate, trying to get the environment for communication set up is probably a bigger thing than the mode or method. Because I grew up around some, I better not say where they're from. Some of you might be from there. But they were pretty rough, tough, poor communicators in many ways. And if you did not understand that they cared about you a great deal, you could take a huge amount of offense at the way they would say things. But we generally didn't because we knew they cared about us. So that is a big part of it. Tom, some great questions. Got any more? You did so well, I was going to go back to the well there.
To carry on the communication topic, I would like to ask the elders, if an individual member of the congregation confides in that, you know, we see the wisdom of God in multiple elders, but they confide in a singular elder, ask them to please keep this confidential, please don't tell anyone else. Can an elder act in any regards, in any way, separate and apart from the other elders? Can it be a singular action if one's needed to be taken?
Whew, that's hot.
Man's running now.
I think there has to be a level of trust when you deal with people. And if a situation warrants, it can be quiet and only between two people, sure. But if it's not, if it's something that has to be dealt with on another level with other people, then you can't make a promise like that. You have to say, no, I can't go there, you know. But if it is possible that it's something you can handle yourself, you do it. You know, you don't throw them under the bus, but you have to very clearly tell them where your position is to start with.
Yes. I think that if someone asks one elder singularly and asks that elder to keep it quiet, that to me is an indication of a lack of trust with the other two, and that would be a problem. I would much sooner hope and pray that a member would come, ask to speak to all of the elders. But Bill's point that you can do that once and remind them of the scriptural way to resolve whatever the problem is, if it's with a brother or if it's with a spouse or whatever, go to that person and let's get it resolved. Keep it as small as possible. If they're not willing to do that, and or with your help in some proper format, I think you're undermining the whole principle of a plurality of elders if that unit is divided by a member beyond that initial visitation. I can't see anything good coming from perpetuating that.
I think they've answered the question.
No.
Okay. A lot is going to depend on what the person's individual problem is. I think it's possible for one to come to one of the elders and say, I've got this problem, I'd like your help to resolve that. But it's going to depend on what that problem is. Now, maybe he has a problem with a particular sin that he is fighting. If he can show that he is truly fighting that and trying to do better, then maybe you can help him privately. But if it's an area of sin and you don't really think he's making that proper effort, then I think there's going to be a time where you need to take it to the other elders. But, you know, so much of this is going to depend on what the individual situation is, what the person's attitude is towards what he's trying to have solved, that, you know, there's no black and white answer to this. But I would say there are some situations where he could come to you, ask your advice, ask for your help, and you could help him individually. So it would depend on what it is.
I think we've made it pretty clear to the congregation and the members that if you speak to one, you speak to all. And when you speak to the elders, you speak to the eldership. And it's the plurality, it's all of us. That's our attitude as the elders, okay? And that's the communication, that's how we've communicated to the elders, to the members of the congregation. So, I can't disagree with anything. Everything is right on. I appreciate what Brother Boyd said, because we lose Matthew 18 and the purpose of intent of Matthew 18, because somebody has something and they don't like what kind of shoes you wear and you didn't wear the right loafers today or whatever, and they'll come and, you know, come to the elders. You know, they'll come to somebody and say, I don't like, you know, what she made for dinner. You know, well, hold on there. Have you gone and gone back? I mean, have you taken this back to the individual and addressed it? You know, Matthew 18 tells you what you need to do when you have a problem against a brother, all right? Step one. And then step two is if you come and talk to the elder, you're talking to the eldership. And at that point, I think it's important that understand that we collectively, at least at Kettering, are communicating among ourselves that there's a problem here far greater than, you know, a Matthew 18 type of a situation. So that's how I would, you know, answer the question and give you some feedback.
One other thing on that, Randy. I don't think we should be surprised if a person comes to one and not another simply because they might feel more comfortable in their ability to communicate with this person versus that person. And then you go from there. It might even be that the problem is with another elder. All right, so at that point, you know, how can I help this person with their frustrating of trying to communicate with this elder, my brother, get those two together. I certainly see where one would, and I've had individuals come to me with just personal sin. But I know that the other elders have had individuals go to them with their personal sin simply because they feel more comfortable in going with one or the other. The thing that they lose, and we need to stress this, is that when you keep that sin restricted among, in our case, three elders, you've only got one elder praying for you. If you're struggling, why not have three? Why not have as many people as possible trying to help you get out of the mess that you're in?
You heard a little diversity in those answers, but a lot of common theme through it as well. You always have to wonder, why does somebody want to go to one elder versus the other? Do you think they're going to give you the answer you want versus what the others might say? Or is it a matter of easier communication? The only thing I'd like to add to that is I learned this not as an elder, but as a preacher. Never say, I will hold this in total confidence without learning something about what you're being asked to hold in total confidence. Because the Bible gives us some instruction. If a brother or sister is walking in sin, we have certain obligations as individual members within the congregation and certainly as elders. When somebody asks me, can I talk to you in total confidence, I say, that depends. I need to know some more. And if it's a matter that can be kept in total confidence, then that has a lot of a power to do good. But you really want to be careful about making that kind of commitment till you know what you're committing to. Because I got in that position once, somebody committing adultery and dropped that on me, and I had already told him I would keep that in total confidence. And I was in a pickle, and they weren't willing to repent, and I was in a double pickle. So I learned the hard way. Maybe you can learn without learning the hard way. Anybody else on this subject or others that you'd like to hear some discussion about, Hobart?
Yeah, well, you know, everything has to be on a case-by-case basis, right? I mean,
Certainly, you know, certainly there's a brother, the brother responsibility. And I can't say that that doesn't happen, right? I mean, certainly there's all kinds of that happens in individual correction or individual conversation, without a doubt. And I didn't mean to imply that that's excluded, but when a sin problem's addressed, to one, and I agree with Brother Boyd, I mean, you have personalities. Certain people like other elders because maybe they grew up with them over the course of 13 or 20 years, and they feel comfortable. We have older members in the congregation that love to go talk to Brother George, all right, just because they can talk to him and they feel more freely in communicating. But that doesn't mean that George doesn't talk to the rest of us, okay? If there's a sin problem or if there's another issue that's you know of greater magnitude, all right. So yeah, certainly. And the other thing is, it's important that the elders communicate among themselves, all right. And I think I think we're learning, and I speak to that to the eldership at Kettering, we're learning how to do that. In a different perspective now, okay? And when I started, there was George and Randy and I, and then George and I. And then within the last year now, it's George and myself and Jim and Russ. And that dynamic changed, okay? And that communication changed. And the relationships go to a different change. And we're learning how to, you know, continue to communicate at that level, that nucleus, right? Communication is such an important thing. It's an important thing in how you communicate among ourselves, how you communicate to your deacons, how you communicate to the congregation, and, you know, how yet you can continue to communicate on one-to-one, all right? Because you always have a responsibility as a brother to a brother or to a sister, all right?
Anybody else have anything to add to that? Uh-oh.
Oh, Karen's going to get mad at me. I didn't mean to imply that you, everything you cooked was marvelous.
No, I just had a question. You were talking about coming to the elders or talk to an elder that not being male, being a female, how do you handle, I know how Randy feels, how do you all handle it if there's a female that is having a problem of dealing with it, seeing that you are male?
You're thinking more about whether we have one-on-one
get-together. Yeah, if I have a problem or something and I want to come and I want to talk to Rich, how does Rich handle it with just Rich and me? One-on-one type thing or because of the situation
Well, first off, you know, I think the first thing that we would do is we would kind of make sure that at least there's two of us in a private conversation with a sister in Christ, right? We don't want to put ourselves in a position that, and it's difficult, you know. We recognize we have several single ladies, single sisters, widows, and whatnot, And we want to make sure that we're communicating. We want to make sure that they feel that they can come and talk to us at the same time. So there may be situations where a sister may feel like, hey, you want to come and talk to me. I would make sure that I'm having Mike, or I may come. Do you mind if I bring Mike with me, and as we have that conversation, depending on what the conversation is with the sister in Christ, and we've had a situation. You know, it's not just a Karen and Rich, it's a Karen and all of us, depending on what the situation might be, or at least what we might perceive the situation might be. So it may be all of us. I hope I'm answering your question, but I think it's dependent. I certainly wouldn't do it by myself. I would always make sure at least somebody else is with me. And most importantly, if just to make sure that there are, you know, four sets of eyes, four ears, somebody else that can can corroborate, if you will, a situation that may occur. But still, even if that conversation when Mike and I sat down with you, that conversation then would be carried out to the other elders as well, right? We would come back and I would say, you know, okay, we're, you know, here was this conversation that we had with Karen, and we would, you know, talk to, you know, the other elders, and it would be inclusive of that, and then we would go from there. I don't know. Hope that helps.
I would say the best way to handle this would to have at least two of the elders to come together to speak to you. I don't think it is a good idea for one man to go to talk to one woman in a private setting. And I think mainly there we have to be concerned about our example. You know, if someone else would see that happening, not knowing what's going on, they could draw different conclusions. Now, if John wasn't available to come along, you know, I might ask for someone else, even to have Jan come along, and maybe she doesn't get involved in the discussion. Maybe she's actually sitting in the next room where she knows that there's nothing wrong going on, but she's at least there so that no one's going to be asking questions. Why did Mike and Karen get together privately the other night? Because we have to be very concerned about our example. And you know, maybe this was something that is a private thing and you only want to deal with one person. But I think there needs to be someone else there at least to keep things on the up and up. Not that I would ever think anything would happen, but because we do have to be concerned about the example and what are other people going to think when they see that situation. So hopefully that helps.
I was a school teacher for way too many years to ever consider being alone with a high school girl, and that kind of carries on over. But I would, had he not mentioned Jan, I was certainly going to mention my wife, because I think Randy mentioned a while ago, sometimes guys don't think like gals. And there is a biblical qualification for elders' wives, too. And I don't know that that's necessarily to keep them completely isolated from the congregation. That if a sister is having a problem and wants to talk with one person, I would certainly say to her, you know, we can get together with another elder, but I'd really love for my wife to sit in with, you know, the three of us, because she'll probably see things that I'll never see in whatever your problem is. And I mean, I have a ton of confidence in her that she's going to be able to help solve the problem or help the sister work through a problem a whole lot better than I can. I'll probably have an answer real quick. It just might be the wrong answer. And if at all possible, I would encourage the elder's wife to be a part of that. If that's not a possibility, then certainly the second elder. Because, and it doesn't matter if it's in the home or in the church building. We ought not to be alone with a sister.
Generally, if all of us are there, we deal with it together. But if not, like Dwayne is there, and a lot of times we will ask one of the elders or deacons' wives to come in. It's according to the situation. We want a woman in there at times, you know. And sometimes the other two elders are gone. I might be the only one there, but I will get Dwayne or someone else, or at least one of the women to come in. And I don't want to be in a situation where they can say things that's not. And I don't necessarily want my wife in there, because the accusation could be made, well, you know, you two are against me. But if it's one of the other elders or deacons' wives, then I think that helps.
Does that answer the question?
This is pretty much like
Well, like Karen said, the last couple of houses that we've had have been big enough where she could still be in the home and us have a living room that was separate enough that could have a meeting with some a sister privately, the conversation be private, but us not really be alone. There have been a couple of occasions where just nothing like that seemed to work out. This was more when I was a preacher. I would occasionally meet a sister at a very public place where there are dozens and dozens of people that could observe. That has some risk with it yet, but not quite like having them in your office or your home by yourself. And let me add one more thing. Some of the fellows here have mentioned how it appears, and we do have to be concerned about that to a degree, but and this really has affected preachers more to my knowledge than elders, but it's all in the same bailiwick. You go into these things most of the time never with any intention of anything sinful happening. But if you have a sister who's having marital problems and her husband's not giving her the attention she thinks she ought to have and not loving her like she thinks she ought to be loved, and she comes in and talks to the preacher or the elders or an elder, and he seems so concerned and so kind and so interested in what is best for her, and if that preacher's home life isn't quite as rosy as some might think it is, suddenly you have two people who never came together with any intention of anything happening, but they're thrust together and suddenly see each other as the answer to each other's problems. And most of us can list at least 20 preachers who have fallen as a result of that. Not quite as much communication is done about what happens to elders, but I'm fairly confident the same thing would happen there. So you don't have to enter into a situation with evil intent. Things can happen, and you just need to be aware of Satan's devices and avoid them. Good question. Anybody else? Scott?